Well, good morning, everybody. My name is George Buckley. It's a pleasure to get a chance to come and speak to you. If you can actually see any of you without the searchlight on my face, I'll hopefully be able to make some eye contact. You'll see when I get presenting here that the message on growth is actually a relatively simple one. I find so often that people come to meetings like this and they want to sort of lay out some elaborate that really looks very, very complex. And in fact, life having proves to us that time and again that if you keep things simple, it's actually the best way. And so I'm going to go through a bunch of concepts that we're going to use for growth. And I think that when you see these ideas built on by my colleagues, you'll see a very clear and simple set of ideas around driving for growth. So this is what we're going to talk about, an emerging strategy for growth. And I'm going to talk about four topics, basically. The first is to try to help you to understand 3M. When you look at 3M from the outside, it's a very complicated company, or seems to be a very complicated company. Sometimes people on the inside have difficulty explaining it. So I'm going to give you a model that helps you demystify 3M, helps you give a set of parameters or a way of thinking about 3M that I think you'll find very helpful. I'm also going to be describing 3M's strategy for growth while at the same time maintaining premium margins. I'm also going to be explaining the origins of further incremental margin growth at 3M, although I will say at the end that we intend to invest a lot of that in growth. I'm also going to speak a little bit about the strategic management of 3M's broad portfolio. So before going to the end, let's go to the beginning and let's sort of go through a summary. I think we all know that the most likely way for a company to be successful is for it to sort of do the things that already made it successful, is to work on its core. So what we're going to do is we're going to drill the core, as this summary on the left side says. We're going to try to get scale where we don't have scale, but basically use the core as our platform to launch growth. In those markets which are a little smaller, but where we still have a significant and good presence, we're going to move toward higher relative shares, and that means a target of becoming the number one in the marketplace. Globalization is the largest single opportunity for growth that we have, and we're also going to heavy up on globalization. I'll probably say this line a little bit later as well, but I read in some reports about 3M about how technology maybe is taking a back seat. Well, I can absolutely promise you that's not the case. So rumors of technology's death have been greatly exaggerated at 3M. But we also know that as we grow, we're going to have to make choices. Sometimes we're going to have choices on price, sometimes we're going to have choices on share, sometimes we're going to have choices on margin. And we'll be very careful to make sure that we balance these all in the interest of driving incremental shareholder value. We'll continue building on the good things that we have on our people, on our brands, on our technologies, on service and on distribution. And that's the fundamental core strategy. If you wanted a single sheet, there's maybe one or two sheets later I think you might like. This is essentially what the strategy is all about. And we think as the diagram shows up here in the organic sales growth area, initially we're going to be stepping through, you know, we have guidance out there of 5 to 8%, and we'll be stepping through going from 5 to 6 to 7 and so on and so forth. But our longer term goal is clearly to take it above the kind of guidance range that we've been giving you. And along with that, to have earnings growth, and Pat will be going over many of these things in more details, is to have earnings in the range 12 to 15%. And to reassure investors that nothing really bad is going to happen here, we're very aware about the need to maintain high investment returns. And frankly speaking, it wouldn't be the way we thought to do anything else. I'm going to describe a concept to you in a little while that talks about a technology and business lattice. And it's that technology and business lattice that we think brings the real power of 3M. And it's that lattice that tends to help protect against serious downsides. We also want to assure you that we are not going to be fair weather friends of investments. We are going to invest in the downsides as well as invest in the upsides, because you need to be investing in the downside to make sure you have the product ready for when there's an upside. And driving growth is going to be a way of doing business for us. So if we take a look at the portfolio in summary, I won't dwell too long on this slide, but fundamentally, here's where we think growth rates might turn. In the core, we're talking about 8% growth. International growth, we think, will grow of the order 13%, perhaps even a little bit better than that. And in adjacencies that we'll be investing in, we think they can achieve 18%. And down at the bottom right-hand side of this slide, a couple of, well, three technology areas here, nanotechnologies, track and trace, and electronics, and we think that they can grow in the band 13% to 15%. So here is what, in terms of managing the portfolio, here is what 3M's portfolio is going to look like. It's really going to have three buckets. And those buckets are businesses that play in large markets, where there'll either be businesses that have scale or businesses that are in the business of getting scale. In smaller markets, businesses that have relative share, high relative share, or be in the business of getting high relative share. And a group of businesses very traditional to 3M, what I call experimental and niche, will be in the business of either moving to this one in due course or moving to that one in due course. And so they'll be in the business of either growing, sell, or close. Here's a few of our businesses looking at our portfolio. I've sort of categorized in those various buckets. Now, this is a little bit non-scientific, so don't let's take it to the extreme. But we obviously have some businesses that have got great scale, that do just superbly well in their businesses. We have another group of businesses in our dentistry and orthodontics areas. They qualify in that regard, that also have relatively good market shares. And so we intend to keep on investing in those areas. There are a bunch of businesses over on the right that you see here that I consider subscale. But you should not necessarily conclude that every single one of these businesses are ones that we intend to sell off. For example, the bottom on that list on the right-hand side will be RFID, and we clearly see this as a massive opportunity, but we've got to find a way to build momentum and get scale there. So let me tell you about 3M's history now and help you understand what makes 3M tick. 3M is rooted in what I would call an invent and experiment approach, which internally is called make a little, sell a little. Let me tell you what make a little, sell a little was about. Make a little, sell a little was about having an entrepreneur that had an idea for a business, and he would come along to the chief executive or a senior manager, and he would say, look, I've got this wonderful idea to grow a business here. Could I have money to invest in it? And the CEO would say, okay, fine, here's $5. Go away and come back and tell us about it when you've made it 10, and we'll think about whether we let you have 15. And so there was this sort of bootstrapping approach to building markets. And by the way, along with that, what happened also is this gentleman would say, well, where can I manufacture this product? And the company would say to him, well, 50 square meters in this plant over here for your extrusion. And he said, yeah, but I have to coat the thing. Well, you can have another 80 square meters over in a different plant, 600 miles away, to do the coating. And well, what about packing and splitting and final configuration? Well, we've got a plant down in Alabama. You can do it there. So what tended to happen was there was a relatively risk-free approach in investments. And I'm going to speak a little bit more about that in just a couple of ticks. But it led to several sorts of a classic for 3M. Firstly, in that continuing invention, we built absolutely world-class material science and surface chemistry capability. Among the best in the world, right up there on the in the cream on top of the milk. But we often invented our ways into marketplaces, so markets were only entered after privileged IP positions were built. And so as a consequence, the markets were small, grow, but the company didn't necessarily always think that scale went along with that success. And as a consequence of entering an unknown market, sometimes the demand was underestimated, and so was the manufacturing capacity to go along with it. And one of the wonderful things that turned out, and in fact, I've worked for a number of different companies, all involved in technology, and this last point that I put down on the bottom of my slide here, The cross-business use of technologies in 3M is the best I've ever seen it in the world. It's the best I've ever seen it in the world. Most other companies I've worked for tend to have sort of siloed boxes where technology is contained. And it's not that necessarily organizations resist passing that to other organizations, but it's not in their nature. This is very much in 3M's nature. This is how 3M works. It takes a technology, communicates it to the markets without any sort of feeling of loss or rancor by the people who originated that technology. Because essentially those technologies are owned by the corporate center. And this is one of the great fabulous things that you see when you actually come inside 3M and look at it from the inside. So what happened over time was we built a very conservative organization. And it also, as I've mentioned, you know, the 50 square meters of manufacturing capacity here and there and 60 there, it led to very, very complex and fragmented supply chains. Individual plants were often run with superb efficiency, but the interconnecting logistics were often very complicated and costly. And we compensated for these long supply chains with higher WIP and higher finished goods inventory. It also, an outcome of what we saw was in some of those businesses, there was chronic underinvestment in capacity in the core. And unfortunately, that led to a lot of upside sales opportunities being missed. And so it was really this inward focus that tended to make 3M what it is. It maybe didn't always focus as much outwards, because it could invent its way into market. Didn't really have to care about planning. Didn't have to care about the competition by virtue of its technologies. So you put all that in the pot and stir it, and this is what emerged. An absolutely fabulous scientific and engineering organization. Underinvestment, as I've mentioned. I think one thing I'd really like to stress on this slide is the absolutely fabulous manufacturing capability that 3M has. Because if you think about it, it's one thing to be in a laboratory and come up with an invention. It is entirely a different thing to be able to convert that invention into a practice. And in some of the products that we make, in particular the optical film area, but not only the optical film area, if you were to see the manufacturing process, and by the way, it is my intention to invite you to see some of these manufacturing processes, you would be absolutely amazed. You would say, now I finally understand why it is that X company or Y company is not able to come in and compete with these people. It's not just the technology, it's the manufacturing capability that is the unsung hero of 3M in my view. Now we think we can address growth by thinking about this in a much more systematic way. Now one of the interesting things that I've done with several of my colleagues at 3M is to ask them what they think 3M's core competency is. And you know, in a sense, 3M has so many core competencies, it's a very, very difficult question to answer. But it's a question that needs answering, because if you want to invest something and double down on something, you better understand and be convinced that you're doubling down on the right thing. So I set about thinking about what was 3M's core business, and clearly then the next step of the pathway is to figure out how do I go about optimizing that. And once I've managed to optimize that, how do I go and look at sensible adjacencies that a company like 3M can get into, and then try to integrate them into our thought processes? And in fact, of course, these adjacencies then become part of the new core that you optimize again, that you identify new adjacencies. So you basically walk around this little diagram here time and time again in growing the company. And if you stop and look at 3M, 3M is itself, and we'll see some slides that will explain that, 3M is itself an absolutely gigantic adjacency machine. That's what 3M is. It's a gigantic adjacency machine. So here's 3M's core. Very simple. 3M is a company that's all about applying coatings to backings. It's a company all about applying coatings to backings. And the coatings are consumptive. Well, first of all, the coatings and the backings are traditionally developed inside 3M. The backings could be maybe woven fabrics, non-fabrics, plastics, metals, films, cloth, paper. And the coatings that we put on those can be adhesives, abrasives, they could be medicines, nanoparticles, imprinted optical patterns, or even in the old days, if you go back to the time when we owned Imation, could be ferrous oxide. This is what we are about. We're about applying backings to coatings. And we do this in a very highly precise manufacturing method. It involves the unrolling and rolling of tapes. And you can see this diagram here. This is a typical manufacturing process for 3M. And I stress again, it's this incredible manufacturing capability that is the really significant barrier to entry of 3M. Now, 3M doesn't stop there. It actually often sells its backing separately and its coatings separately. And in fact, you see an example on here, several examples. This is a backing, an abrasive grain that we sell separately. There's a roofing granule that we sell in the roofing business that somebody else uses as a coating to put on their backings. Or Thinsulate thermal and acoustic insulation that we reform in some cases and make respirators out of. So sometimes we sell the backings and the coatings separately. And by the way, it's this kind of knowledge base that you build up and you leverage into other markets, which I'll speak about in just a minute. There's another real key point. It's not just about applying coatings to backings. It's what you do with the shapes of those coatings that are important. If you take a look over at the right-hand side, this is an abrasive belt. We brand it Trizact. Now look at the pattern that we've imprinted on the surface. Now the pattern that we've imprinted on the surface fundamentally alters the performance of this material. You can see you're all these little notches and grooves. They're a little bit like the treads in a tire that push out water. These push out the abraded material. And you've fundamentally changed the behavior of a device by doing that. Let's look over here. This is an optical film. This is the backing. This is the coating. We've coated, imprinted a layer of optical films on the surface. This is the Cubitron grain with this sort of pyramid structure. This, and we'll talk about this in just a few minutes, is actually a close-up of a fuel cell proton exchange membrane. And here's the little old humble post-it note. Look at this. This is a microscopic view of the adhesive pattern on a post-it note. And you see this little field of mushrooms up here? It's that field of mushrooms that allows you to put the post-it note on a surface and take it off again and again and again. And the density of the adhesive. So what we do is we fundamentally alter the performance of products by changing the surface structures. We call this micro-replication in 3M. And when you take it, by the way, right down to its ultimate, in this sort of near atomic levels, we call it nanotechnology. That's where this fabulous capability eventually ends. And we think that nanotechnology is going to be the real sort of wave of material science invention for the future. Now, you can well imagine that also what happens in this sort of sequence of learning in 3M is if you put adhesives on a backing, you end up learning an awful lot about adhesives. And so you build a new competency. You can understand, and by the way, that competency might be leveraged in a whole host of different markets. It may be put into dentistry. It may be put into building structures like this or any others. You can also imagine that if you imprint an optical pattern on a backing, you end up learning a lot about optics. So there's this cascading set of adjacencies and competencies that get built over time by companies like 3M. And, you know, so at its heart, 3M is really an invention and manufacturing company. That's what makes us so good. Now, here's where we begin to weave this together. I've got a diagram here of nine of 3M's large selection of technologies. And over here, a bunch of markets. And what 3M does is this. Takes its adhesive competency and it finds applications in architecture, in auto, in electronic, graphic arts, and so on and so forth, all the way down there. Then it does it again with abrasives. I didn't have an abrasives one in graphic arts, you'll notice, so at least I was accurate here. And it does it the same with ceramics. And it does it the same with every single one of these. And it's this woven lattice, this cross-linkages that link all of these technologies with all of these markets, that we've sort of got a Kevlar jacket, shall we call it, in the middle here, that makes 3M so difficult to attack. Because if you have one of these fails, one of these technologies fails in one of these markets, the downside risk in all of the others is very, very small. That's an interesting diagram. Let me show you what it really looks like. That left-hand side actually looks like that. There's another 32 other technology platforms that we do that we're being down this left-hand side. And a whole bunch more markets, by the way. So this is the real power of 3M. I've told you the story because it's important to realize that it's not really the classic conglomerate, where you end up with a bunch of siloed businesses that have no interconnection with one another. It's a unique model of what I call an adjacency lattice on my slide here. And essentially, the vast majority, maybe not all, but the vast majority of 3M businesses are linked in this way. And we quote Bob Metcalfe here, who was the inventor of the Ethernet, who said the power of a network or a lattice is proportional to the square of the number of users. If you take a look at that square of the users in that lattice, that Kevlar jacket that we build, you'll understand why it makes 3M so enduring as an industrial competitor and so difficult to beat. But I've also made a point at the bottom here that it's also one of the things that makes 3M difficult to unpick, because those very linkages are things that lock in technologies and marketplaces, and trying to separate them can be extraordinarily difficult. You only can end up divesting things if they're not core, which are outside that lattice network. So, put in a summary now. Here's how the 3M invention machine goes to market. Here's its material science on the left here to produce these backings, and it uses mostly surface chemistry. By the way, they're interchangeable between the two to make coatings. These roll-to-roll tape manufacturing does final cutout, and then sends them out to channels of distribution. I've put up here OEM and mass channel, but in point of fact, we also in some of our markets have independent dealer distribution as well. Dentistry is a classic example of that. So that's how the 3M invention machine goes to market. Now, let me give you another example here of how technology can replicate inside 3M. We started off with a very humble overhead projector lens, an epidioscope, as I was trained to call it as a young engineer. And obviously, in learning how to build an epidioscope, we learn how to make projector lenses. And, of course, in order to make the product useful, we learn how to make film. And in learning how to make simple acetate films, we learn how to make or learn about the technology of total internal reflection. And that led us into the business of optical films. And then that led us down this pathway with all of these cascading applications in the film business from this simple overhead projector. That's how it happened inside 3M. But again, the result is even more surprising. This is what really happened. And you see from the birthplace of this relatively simple overhead projector of applications in material science, in electronics, adhesives, abrasives, and so on and so forth, right across our portfolio, from a simple, single invention. And there is no other company in the world that does this, and that's what makes 3M so good at what it does. Let's speak a little bit about technology now. I think I said earlier the death of technology has been greatly exaggerated at 3M. And as far as we're concerned, certainly as far as I'm concerned, you know I'm an engineer. I'm very much a person interested in innovation and engineering. And so at the heart of the company is technology and innovation. It's our past and it is our future. Nothing has changed. And you'll see that in just a few minutes with some proof positive. We think it's one of the keys of success is unfettered, albeit well-directed. It's not just about money. Now, I can find ways to spend money. That's very easy. So it's not about the volumetric measure. It's about where it's focused and where it's directed. We intend to alter some of the things that we do. We'll be looking for more disruptive technologies, looking for more out-of-the-garage technologies. But just to reassure you that technological differentiation remains a fundamental tenet, a fundamental way that we do business in the way we think about it. This was Business Week's scoring on the world's most innovative companies, just on the 24th of April. And you'll see here Asia, Europe, North America, and global, and we scored global. And if you take a look at the company that we keep, and the broad-based nature of our scoring, you'll, I think, be very impressed. Of course, while these are just scores from some in a magazine, the recognition of our capabilities in this area is clearly well established. So innovation. Well, you know, I hear again a lot of talk about innovation. But as the title of this slide says, that innovation is not just about process. It's also about imagination and people. Because you can put processes in place. And by the way, a process put in place will get you probably the same as you always got. If you put processes in place in 1800 and ask people how to design a ship, you'd have got a sailing ship. So it's not just about process. It's about that magic dust that converts, shall we say, Toyota Corollas into Ferraris. I'm not suggesting that you can make a one-to-one transfer. But it's that same kind of concept. And it's the thing that many companies miss. You need this magic, this sparkle of creativity. It has to be mixed in. And it starts with growth-minded leaders. And who will then train and attract and keep growth-minded inventors? You sprinkle it together with some imagination and some customer input, some great technology and some commercial excellence, you'll eventually drive growth. And by the way, the growth is infectious. The growth inspires people and feeds back to make them much more energized, and is one of the real ways of building a virtuous circle. I've seen this work many times before, and we'll make it work at 3M. So on, let's talk about just briefly about some of our products. Nearly all of these products, by the way, are related in technology. In technology, odd though it may seem. Our DBF films, our dual brightness enhancing films, our floating image technology for security. This overhead line in a transmission, a high voltage transmission cable. We have our, and I think there's a model of this in the product rooms, of our noise cancelling headphones. Noise cancelling stethoscope. This is the gold standard. If you're a surgeon, if you're a doctor, this is what you want to buy. This is the Trizact abrasive, the one with the funny pattern on there that I showed you earlier. Here we are, another backings and coatings product, flexible circuit. A wonderful thing, this post-it picture paper that I'll not say too much about, which Mo is going to speak about in a few minutes. So here's what our patent portfolio takes a look look like. In 2006, we have about a portfolio of 50,000 patents, or either issued or pending. 50,000. And the long-term goal, that's really in the five-year planning period, 100,000 patents. So if you think that technology or innovation has died at 3M, then I think you can see this picture as proof positive. Speaking about international growth, here's the corresponding number for what we call BRIC PE countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Poland. And so you'll see in 2006, we are expecting to have about 1,000 filings in 2006 in those countries. Here's an interesting thing, how material science has changed. A little bit of a sort of history walk here. You know, go back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s when large-scale manufacturing really got underway. And it went through a phase, and in this particular case, it's the substitution of metal to plastics. But in some cases, it was a substitution also of mechanical sensors to electronic ones. And now what we're seeing is many of these things now being replaced by nanotechnology applications. And this particular product is an adhesive for a dental application, which was named the top 10 nanotech product in 2006. One of the things that we will do is to become the world's technology, nanotechnology giant. We are, in a sense, already a nanotechnology giant. For those of you who are not familiar with this concept, nanotechnology is about the micro-machining and micro-assembly of products in sizes less than 1,000 nanometers, less than a millionth of a meter. And 3M has more than a billion sales in this area at this moment in time. And we think it's this kind of technology that's going to recycle, re-energize all of the material science applications that we have. And we have applications in all of these work areas. I'm not going to list them. And we're finding new applications every day. So here's an example of that. This is a fuel cell, which uses nanotechnology to make the sharp end of the product, the exchange membrane here in the middle. Look at this as sort of three slices of bread. There's an anode on one side, a cathode on the other, and a device in the middle, a little furry device. And what we do here is we take oxygen from the air and mix it with the fuel, force it through this membrane, and actually the membrane in that is an induced catalytic reaction that produces water and produces electricity as a byproduct, is actually what happens. And this particular cell will produce about 7/10 of a volt, and so if you stack enough of them together, it'll take about a suitcase size of these to run a typical family car. And if you take that, the meat in the sandwich here, and blow it up, it looks like this. And if we look at it at the microscopic level, and think of the concept of we use this one on President Bush, by the way, when he came to visit us, a 12,000 acre wheat field, and the strands of corn, there are as many strands of these nano whiskers on one of these devices as there are strands of field, strands of wheat in a 12,000 acre wheat field. There are about 4 billion of these whiskers per square centimeter. So this is another example of nanotechnology. By the way, 3M is the largest manufacturer of these devices in the world today. Here's a couple of production lines that we have. They're small lines. By the way, notice also the roll-to-roll manufacturing. Again, it's backings and coatings, and it's rolling and unrolling of tape. Here's another application of nanotechnology. Our BEF films, our brightness enhancing films. I don't know if you know this, many people don't really know this, but an LCD screen is not actually self-light generating. It's not like a CRT tube. What you have to do is backlight it. The LCD panel that we show up here is a little bit like a bunch of electronic windows. If you could look down the side of here, an LCD panel is like a bunch of windows that are opened by a set of transistors. And they allow light from behind to shine through, and it's that patterning of opening of the windows that allows you to see the image that you see on the screen. But the only way that that can work is with products that we make, the backlights, the focusing films, to make sure that you can actually see the screen. And you saw, I think, an earlier one. In fact, here we are. This is what happens. You can get some light without these focusing films, but what it will do is it will double the brightness and roughly half the power that you have to do to use to get that brightness. And you'll see examples of this, by the way, in the product room. And multiple applications here for these technologies. Another variant on that theme is our multi-layer optical films. So this is now not a film that you take and imprint a pattern on. You layer them in stacks like a sort of deck of cards. And the ultimate manifestation of this deck of cards, by the way, is in our LCD DBEF films that have about 140 layers stacked together in less than a millimeter height. And if you can understand the challenge of manufacturing something like that with high quality, so you don't see blemishes and minor pits in it, is extraordinarily challenging. And it's why you don't see more people entering this market. The manufacturing challenge is extraordinarily difficult. But the beauty of these sorts of films is what you can do is you can design them with different materials and different thicknesses and different effects. Coloring effects. So what you can do is you can create colors without colorants. Or you can get total reflection and you can invent mirrors without metal. And these are, the mirrors that we've designed are up to 99% reflective. The largest reflectivity mirrors anywhere in the world. You can get polarization without absorption. And actually here, some applications making windows for cars. You can get light without heat. So let's talk a little bit now about the growth. Enough of technology for a minute. We have four elements of our growth strategy, and they are as follows: to grow our current core business. I've already talked quite a bit about that. Complementary acquisitions, building new businesses via EBOs, and international growth. And I'm going to speak a little bit about each of those in due course. So we're going to talk first about growing the current core, this left-hand side one. By the way, acquisitions. Acquisitions are not just done to build bulk. They aren't only just about buying territory, but they are about helping to reinforce the core
They may give you access to a marketplace through distribution. They may give you technology that you don't own. They may give you mass and allow you to get to the point where you have economies of scale that you wouldn't otherwise have. So they're used for many different reasons, not just one. They also, of course, can help build EBOs. And in my former life, I was doing this a lot. Sometimes you need just a small facilitating acquisition to give you market access and some technology to add a little bit to your own capabilities to help them grow. And then obviously, they also help international growth as well. So let's go through the core business now in detail. So drill down in that core. Well, the core element itself has four sub-elements. The first is, look, stick to your knitting. Whether you're in optical films or whether you're in electrical connectors, take that core and just drill down and drill down and drill down and drill down until you get everything you possibly can. Do everything you possibly can to make your customers happy. Constantly reinventing that core. Localize. In some cases, get some as well. But also, you have to think about another thing. How do I take that core and extend it? I think you'll understand that typically 3M participates in a sort of a piece of the triangle right at the peak in a super premium margin area. But if you go just a little bit into the market below that, there are some great areas that, frankly speaking, we've either vacated or ignored, partly because we didn't always have the interest. It's really amazing to me sometimes to see in 3M where we have a piece of business that may be making 48% at the OP line, and we walked away from business at the 40% OP line because we thought it was dilutive. It's really kind of an interesting concept, at least it was for me, especially coming from the boat business where you scratch to get eight. But anyway, there we are. So this is about a number of different things. It's extending the core into areas where we currently participate, and we'll get a chance to talk about that in a minute. Another key thing here is invent a new future. You know, whether we like it or not, almost any business that we are in today, 3M's in today, any company is in today, is going to have a new future. Somebody's out there today working on inventing that new future. We haven't always done, we've done a great job in this area, absolutely fabulous job in this area. We haven't always done as good a job over here in planning for cannibalization. Because the reality is if we don't plan for cannibalization of our products, somebody else is. That's just life. And especially when you think about some of the products that we make that overcome the basic inadequacies or deficiencies in someone else's product, you can understand what they're trying to do is figure a way to design you out. So take this as a real mission. And by the way, open our minds to licensing. Open our minds to using small technology companies. Open our minds to other forms of getting technology into our company. But I will absolutely assure you, if you don't invent a new future for yourself, somebody else is going to. And this will be one of the areas where we direct more of our internal technical resources to make sure that strategically we're doing this thing and defending it. And here, building broad-based competencies. I'll speak about that in just a minute. So a few more details here if you want, but think of the marketplace as this triangle. This is where we typically participate, and there's a sort of an empty or a vacated set below it. We're talking here about trying to get everything we can in this segment of the market. And this is how we've done it traditionally. If you take just in gym business, we went from originally those simple overhead projector lenses and acetate films all the way down a sequence that led us to light pipes, BEF, DBEF films, and APF. This is a polarizer film. And do everything you can to link with your customers, because if you don't form relationships with your customers, again, all it does, it enhances their willingness to toss you out when the time comes. So growing the current core. Extend the core. This is about building scale and growing. It's about filling in the product white spaces to try to make yourself important to the customers. It's, by the way, about defending the market against a market you may well have created. In fact, often we did, against new entrants that sneak in here and try to build familiarity and intimacy with your customers. You've got to try to be very competitive and stop that happening if you can. Dual branding, typically, in these upper middle markets, you don't use your premium brands and premium technologies. You use something different. I'll give you an example, I think, in the next slide. And thoughtfully extend private labeling. Because if private labeling is going to happen, then it may as well happen with you. As long as you don't undermine your brands or in some way do something silly, there's nothing wrong with private labeling, because that volume is going to go somewhere. So a few examples of how we've already done this. If you look at the top of the pyramid and the middle of the pyramid and the bottom end, we've typically, in the consumer space, we've used our Post-it Super Sticky and our Scotch Tape. But in the middle of the brands, in the middle of the market, we've used Highland. Not with every customer, by the way. Not with every customer. So a lot more applications of this. And down at the bottom, this is a 3M product, private label tape. We've done exactly the same, by the way, in the mask area. We participate in this top area of the marketplace, and then in the middle of the marketplace with this Coyote brand. And over on the left-hand side of the screen, we actually, and this is an oddity, we began in the opposite direction. We started at the less expensive, what we call engineering-grade reflective products or signs, and progressively moved up to market until we get the top one, which we call diamond grade. So we do this in a number of businesses quite successfully, and we're really just talking about extending it to other areas. Doing what we're already good at. On Invent a New Future, I've said a lot about this. But speed is one of the things here. You know, if you go back to the 60s and 70s, there was a time when big companies ate small companies. And in the 70s through the 90s, it was a time when strong companies ate weak companies. And now is a time, ladies and gentlemen, where fast companies eat slow companies. So another theme that we will have here is picking up the pace of development, picking up the pace of innovation. Trying to avoid some of the things that companies like ours classically suffer from, not invented here syndrome, and beat the competitors to our future. This one, fundamentally, I think is best described by the triangle at the top here. It's really about broadening the base. It's about saying, look, recognize if you're an optical company, then become strong overall in optics. If you're an office supply company, then become strong overall in office supply company. If you're a connector company, become strong overall in connectors. So let's speak now for a moment about acquisitions and divestitures. Both will become part of what we do here, and over time we'll divest businesses in our company if they can't meet the following criteria. If we can't over time build scale or good relative share, or we can't differentiate them through technology, or the base technology is at end of life, or where the risk profile suggests that someone else, another owner, could extract more value from them than we can. We'll try to make sure that we're thoughtful about acquisitions and that the majority of those will be EPS accretive and neutral in year one and EV accretive by the end of year three. They will always closely reflect and support our strategic plan. You won't find us straying too far from the beaten path. And we are prepared to sacrifice a little bit of margin as long as we can get additional growth and the contribution of shareholder value remain. And I stress here that we expect returns to remain high. And here's a diagram I stole from a lady in the audience. She can admit it to anybody on her left or right that if she wants to. But it was a wonderful screening criteria I thought about. How do you go about looking at acquisitions for growth? And this is a little methodology that we have begun to follow. We had our own version of this, but we didn't draw it on a diagram quite as well as she did. So this is what we'll do. I'm not going to go through it in detail. It will come up again in Pat's presentation. Another area for growth, I spoke about earlier, was EBO candidates. EBOs are what IBM called emerging business opportunities. Now, I've been involved in doing a lot of this over the years. And essentially, what an organization will have is some competency over in another organization, similar competency over here. And we're talking about collecting all of these up into a single entity, maybe adding some acquisitions to them and forming a new business from them. We call them EBOs. And the candidates are, as I've listed out here, are filtration, We've already done the Q&A one that you know about. Track and trace, energy and materials extract, minerals extraction, and food safety. But there are more, but here are the ones we're focusing on initially. Q&A, we already did in the water filtration, but you know there's a complementary piece of this puzzle which is in air filtration. We're speaking just here about the liquid filtration. We have a business of about $450 million here. Market's growing reasonable, 10%. Q&A is growing about 14 or 15. And we have a fairly sizable activity here, over 2,000 employees and 137 patents. So we think this is an area we will continue to grow and expand on. A little bubble diagram shows you where you can take this. And again, we've got a couple of these in my presentation. And it wasn't, we ran out of space on the charts before we ran out of ideas. So lots of opportunities out in these areas for application of Q&A's technology. Track and trace. We already have somewhere around $200 to $250 million of sales in this area, currently focusing on RFID applications in library services, as shown in the little picture in the left-hand corner, underground location services, as shown in the middle, and HiJump, which is a warehouse RFID company. The market here is absolutely colossal, absolutely colossal. It is my view that probably within 7 years, every single moving asset in the world will be tracked, including you and your children, by the way. And when you go down this pathway and think about the opportunities, they are absolutely phenomenal. So we are in good shape here, but we do need some more GPS-type assets, we think. And here's what fundamentally track and trace is all about. It's about who am I, where am I, how am I, and please do all of this other stuff and improve me and advantage me. And we have some capabilities, which come, if you'd watch the screen, they've now come up in red, these kind of technological capabilities already, the ones that I've listed in red here. But we are short of quite another. But this is a wonderful space, it seems, for us to invest in. We already have great technology there, but we need a little bit more. Few examples here, container monitoring, food supply chain, medical specimens, and so on and so forth. We actually already participate in medical specimen tracking and in yard and warehouse management. We already do that. And if we think about the technologies of UHF and RFID and GPS, and you look at the applications that are in different spaces here, I've listed consumer, agriculture, industrial, and so on and so forth, and then just walk out and see what they are. Just pick on security for a minute. They're in border crossing, in passport IDs, ID cards, in pets, in tracking criminals, in tracking children, tracking vehicles. There's all sorts of different applications. And you can do exactly the same in the medical field. It's about tracking transports, records, pathology, patients and assets, and so on and so forth. And I could go on and on and on and on and on. Just an absolutely massive space, and I stress that when I drew this diagram, I didn't run out of ideas, I ran out of space. So fabulous opportunities, and we participate in some of these today, and we'll participate in more tomorrow. Another potential blockbuster that we have is in overhead power transmission. Now you say, what's 3M doing in overhead power transmission? It's an adjacency that we play. We make the little fibers, the ceramic fibers, that are in the middle of this. Now, typically, on an overhead transmission line, there's an aluminum outer cable and a steel inner that supports it. We replace that steel inner with ceramic fibers embedded in an aluminum matrix, and it allows the transmission line to elevate its operating temperature. Classic ones, typical ones, operate at about 90. Ours will run in service at between 210 and 240. And the beauty of this is it allows you to put massive amounts more power down a transmission line. So in those cases where you're restricted by, a utility is restricted by rights of way, you've no longer got to try to get a new right of way or put bigger towers at higher voltage. It's a very simple solution for them. The trick here for us is manufacturing costs. Our manufacturing costs at the moment of the fibers are still relatively high, but we have several hundred miles of test lines in place now running absolutely superbly. And as we continue to push on the manufacturing costs, get that down and down and down, we think if we can get it down in within 2x of conventional cable, this is going to be an absolute bonanza. Let's talk a little bit about international growth now. You probably already know that our growth rates overseas are about 2 to 3x the United States. Traditionally, we've not always given you details on, on this, but we've given you a few more here. We expect today 3M sales are 61% of our sales are overseas. We think that's going to be about 90 at the end of the planning period. Our focus, but not exclusively, is going to be on what we call BRIC-P countries, again, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Poland. China today is growing at about 35% a year for us. By the end of the year, we'll have about $1 billion of sales there and six plants. India is growing at about 100% CAGR, albeit off a lower base, but it's growing very, very rapidly. And we're also getting substantial double-digit rate growth in Eastern Europe. But by the way, we won't leave anybody behind. We don't intend to leave Western Europe, anybody else, alone. Here's a forecasted profile of our CapEx in the BRIC-P countries. There's no cap on this number. It's what's been submitted to us. And, of course, Pat and myself will drive this higher still to make sure we get great returns and great growth. Here, on those BRIC-P countries, here's what it looks like right today. It will by the end of 2000. In Russia, we'll have a single plant of just over 200. We have six plants and 2,000 employees in China. We have in India a little over 700 employees and two plants. In Brazil, almost 3,000 employees and three plants. And here's what our sales profile will look like. This is going back to 2003. Here's the end of the planning period at 2011. And you can see how the percentages have changed from 2003. APAC, Asia Pacific, has gone from 25 to 29, 29 to 35. Middle East and Africa and Europe have gone from 22 to 25 to 26, and Latin America from 7 to 9, and the U.S. from 46 to 30. So this is what's happening in our sales pattern. Speak now a little bit about operational excellence. Anybody in the room that knows me from my time at Brunswick and also my time at Emerson, I'm essentially a manufacturing and engineering guy. I love operations. Innovation, too. And in life, one always has to balance tremendous discipline with tremendous opportunity. And this is the way, this is a concept I conceived of when I was at Emerson, that really a manufacturing company has these six competitive advantages, competitive platforms: cost, brands, distribution, technology, service, and people. You must invest in if you want to be successful. You cannot just have costs and have terrible service, or just have technology and horrible costs. It doesn't work. Everything in life has to be kept in balance. So just so you understand that this is still remains a tremendous focus for us. And of course, if I was to have only one, if I was to choose, I would choose cost, because I believe that low cost is the ultimate competitive deadly weapon. Our commitment to Six Sigma remains, although we are now dissolving it into the fabric of the company, and it's being modified to include lean methods, which seem to be the new wave of operational improvements that we have coming. And we'll be driving more on procurement and logistics. Here's going back now to something I said at the beginning of my presentation. Here's one of the things that you find at 3M. And this probably applies to about half of our business. It doesn't apply to all. But we start with raw material in a plant, and we put it to the first plant. We perform one action on it, one activity on it. We move it to another, to another, to another, to another. And, of course, every time you move material, three things happen. Money sticks to it, time sticks to it, and what we call OTIF, on time in full, customer service sticks to it. So you want short supply lines. Everybody knows that, and that's one of the keys for us. And this is what happens to your inventory and to your ability to forecast. As you take all the time that this stuff moves around these various locations, and you're trying, a sales guy is trying to forecast what he needs for finished goods over here on the right-hand side, sometimes 200 days before. Well, you know what? You're not going to get all that much of it right. You're always going to have too much of something and not enough of another. And so the key for us is to shorten these lines, as we've done, and I'll show you in just a minute, get them down to 10 days, where as much as we can of our product is made to order and not made to stock. This is, and by the way, when you do that, all of this WIP goes, and all of this finished goods goes. So here's an example in Moore's business where we did it. This is a simple manufacturing process for postage flags. We make these sort of big jumbo rolls on the left, and we split them into little mini jumbos, and then we guillotine them and chop them up into little pieces and pack them. This is how it used to be done this is what the supply chain looked like between 88 and 96. This stuff moved all over Hell's Acres. And by the way, the manufacturing cycle time was 95 days from when material entered the first plant to the point where it left and went to a warehouse was 95 days. That's how it was. And this is what it looks like today. As we've consolidated and weeded out some of the intermediate steps, and now our cycle time is 15 days. But by the way, in some of our products like post-it notes, this is down in hours. So this is what can happen to you if you do what I've just said. And by the way, let me show you now some costs. These are actual costs. This is not a sort of constructed, contrived diagram. Although, by the way, I've been very careful not to show you anything on here useful. I don't want competitors seeing this chart and being able to decode it. But each of these are elements of our non-material unit costs. And this is how they were in 2000. And this is how they are in 2006 on a two-pack. 25%. And a lot of this has been gotten out by costs in shrinking the supply chain. This is what is available in 3M. When you worry about whether there's more juice in the lemon, you know, can these guys operate the juice press just one more turn or two more turns and get more molecules out of the lemon? I can assure you there's a lot more molecules left in this lemon, so please don't be concerned about that. Here's what happens when you drive OTIF on time in full. This is in Joe's business in the electrical communications area. This is a record of Joe's sales from January 03 to March 03. And the blue line is his OTIF service number. The line is his sales. I think you can see what happens when OTIF goes up, sales go up. And Joe, I think, will get a chance to speak a little bit more about this in due course. And it's been a wonderful source of some of the driver of growth that you've seen in Joe's business. And customers are recognizing that with better loyalty. That is exactly how it's working out. So on our manufacturing footprint now, still sticking with operations. Look, we're going where customers are going. If the customer's going to Eastern Europe, we're going to Eastern Europe. If the customers are staying in the United States, we're staying in the United States. They're going to Asia, and that's where we're going. We need to shorten those supply chains as much as we can. And where we can get scale, either have scale or get scale, the plants that we construct will be in single focus plants, close to the customer, trying to make product made to order. As we design these plants, I think all these X factors, whether it was SARS, whether it's avian flu, whether it's anything else, AIDS, these sort of X factor things seems to be with us now. It could be hurricanes, all sorts of different things. So we've got to recognize and to the extent that we can, build some surge capacity in those plants. And that's what we were doing in our overall designs. Here's what's happened on price and inflation. Look at the little bar chart on the left-hand side here. This is what we've managed to achieve net in procurement savings year over year going back to 2002. But again, Pat and I still believe there's lots more opportunities in this particular, lots more juice in this lemon. So great progress, but a lot more to do. Just to sort of tease you with some numbers, we purchase a little more than $8 billion of procurement of materials and services. And just a 1% improvement in that purchase price improves our margins, our OP margins, by 30 basis points. But we have, a lot of opportunities to go at. And we think that releasing some capacity with more investments will help this, help our OTIF performance. Our OTIF performance will help drive sales. And the shortened supply chains will also release working capital that we can invest in capacity. And scale will reduce costs. Let's talk a little bit about value now. Well, this is a chart that we calculated that shows the relative value of 100 basis points of growth to 100 basis points improvement in margin. Depends on margins you have and what capital structure you have, your cost of capital in particular. But that number turns out to be 5.2 for 3M. It turns out to be 10 for GE. Procter & Gamble's not bad too. So we know that the value of growth in our company is very compelling. Okay, let's give you a summary growth picture. Try to sort of focus this down for you. In our traditional core, if you look at this diagram, this triangle is representing our marketplace. And this is the traditional place where 3M plays. We think that we can continue to do what we're doing here. We'll get 5 to 8% sales growth in the core with 40% leverage using our primary brands. We may get more in due course, but right now our task is to step through that gap. We think as we push down a little bit here, and by the way, we will not push down below margins where that are our peer margins. So we're talking about very high margins in these segments of the business, and we need some capacity, by the way, to do it too. We think we can get 2 to 4% growth as well. And when we look at adjacencies, acquisitions, we think we can get another 3 to 5% sales growth. And by the way, international expansion occurs really in all of these three dimensions. Now, of course, I'm looking at these three dimensions, and you can never be absolutely certain how fast you can get them going because you have other impediments. But I've shown you a little chart here that tries to get across the point, look, not all the growth rates are going to be the same. Not all the growth starts at the same time. So you can't make always just additive arithmetic in these sorts of things. But we, in the long term, we are absolutely committed to this issue of growth. And here's if you wanted a simple summary chart of what our strategy is on acquisitions and divestitures, on our capital strategy and organic growth, here's a little sort of here's one you'd pull out and take away because it puts it here in summary. Here are our local currency targets and 5 to 8 to 5, basically going down 8 local currency organic growth target. This is what they look like, and the fourth quarter average on the right hand side. Here's what our return on equity and return on capital look like. About twice that of our peers. So if you're going to return, if you're going to invest anywhere, it ought to be in the core. And here's what our DuPont analysis looks like. So in summary, three more slides to go. And I'm probably going to end up reading these just to make sure the point at home. I will tell you a broad base support for growth exists in 3M. Our employees are absolutely ready for this. You know, there's only so much joy you can get by working on the wine press. Growing grapes is a lot more interesting as far as I'm concerned. We are absolutely convinced, our management team is absolutely convinced that we can get accelerated growth without necessarily diluting our margins significantly. We can still maintain very superior margins. We think actually the barriers to growth have been mainly internally imposed and even self-generated, not external. We also think the unique nature of 3M's business model lends power unseen in anywhere else in American industry, frankly speaking. Technology will remain part of who we are, and we'll weed and feed on divestitures over time. So our number one growth priority is to build scale and relative share in 3M's traditional core markets. Our number two growth priority is international. Our number three growth priority is in those adjacency EBOs. And supported by some internal work generating attitudinal changes in our company to secondary markets. As I mentioned on Invent a New Future, we're going to be focusing our technical resources on supporting the street. Much more focus, less serendipity guiding that. Shorter and nimble supply chains to drive OTIF and sales. Improved technological platforms in software and electronics. Because there are a number of businesses that we lost over the year. Mark describes this in a very interesting way. He talks about the analog to digital conversion that we weren't able to respond to. Talk about Mark Colin. And we don't want to miss the next range round of those. The product and localization will be another key part of this. And as I said here, growth is not magic, but it's a different and often harder, but ultimately much more rewarding kind of work. This is our kind of work from here on in. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, we'll take some questions now. I'd just like to remind everyone there will be four wireless mics in the room. If everybody please state your name and your firm, and just wait a second for the microphone because we need to make sure we record these on the webcast.
Henry Ann with Buckingham Research Group. George, there's one slide that says perhaps the largest single growth opportunity with the core circle around GPS, RFID,
yep.
UHFID. Given that's in the electronics and digital area, is that the acquisition focus? That's where it's going to be?
I'd call it a focus. I think we're going to do, as we see opportunities come up, that's one where we're a key skill lacking. But, of course, other areas were some key skill lackings, too. We just saw, as we looked at that one, it was just a fabulous opportunity. So we'll have to get some other capabilities in GPS if we're going to be able to harvest that kind of opportunity.
John H. Merrill Lynch. Two questions. George, the 5-8 that 3M's going to do this year clearly would not be benefiting from some of these initiatives. What kind of a time frame would you like us to put on how long it will take to kind of begin to stimulate the growth, first part? And the second one was just really you described sort of the historical logistical complexity. I'm presuming the inference is that there is still some low-hanging fruit or operational improvement. Could you be able to quantify this a little bit and also perhaps put a little bit of a time frame in terms of realizing some of that benefit?
Well, I learned an important rule about forecasting, which was by all means give a number and by all means give a time, but never give a number and a time. So I'm going to do the same on you, John. Sorry. We are investing like crazy in our core. We have just released a lot of capital investment in our core. And by the nature of the beast, it takes time to acquire sites, to build plants, to launch plants. And so that is one of the things that ends up limiting some of that kind of stuff. It's not that the growth is not there. You don't have the capacity always to go after it as much as you can. So I think that you ought to see stepping in that 5-8 over the next couple of years. I mean, clearly, we hope that we're going to drive that as fast as we possibly can, and maybe it'll be a bit better than that. But so we're not intending to be slouches. We're not sort of waiting for the for the world to go by. We are we're going to march forward in with that. But it will be limited by those sorts of things, John. That's going to be the challenge for us. But we're not limited by or ideas.
Most CEOs get a grace period. I mean, how? You know, Wall Street wants an instant gratification type of formula. I mean, clearly,
sure.
How long do you think it's going to begin to take to realize some of this? And then maybe if you could address the
I think you have to be fair. I think you have to be fair and say it's a couple of years. It doesn't mean that you won't see incremental steps towards that. Do you want to offer anything else on that, Pat? I think you've got to get it bit by bit, John. You've got to build momentum. I think you've got to be realistic about it.
Yeah, it's Bob Cornell from Lehman Brothers. You know, George, you covered a lot of ground here, but the emphasis seemed to be on, technology or manufacturing, innovation. You didn't say as much about selling and marketing, and maybe you could comment on how you characterize the strengths here. I mean, we got the point about moving down, new opportunities, but selling and marketing right there, maybe.
You heard me build or beat on the drum of brands many, many times. And we have actually stepped up the spend, and Mo will talk about this, I think, a little bit. We stepped up the spend quite a bit on advertising spend. But I do think that, to be fair, there's an untapped amount of potential in marketing in 3M. Because we've been run by scientists, frankly speaking, that skill set I don't think has been given all of the just deserves that it has. And I've even pushed on that quite a bit. My colleagues would confirm that in the company. So that will get its attention. But it is at least for the moment a subsidiary attention while we get some of these other issues sorted out.
John Chris from European Investors. Looking into the future, could you touch on a couple of subjects that you didn't dwell on? One is the growth rate you expect in research development and SG&A expenses. The other is, another is, do you expect competitive, outside competitive pressures against you to increase or decrease going forward? And finally, do you expect the cyclicality of 3M to increase or decrease from what it's been in the past going forward?
Okay, let me see if I can remember them all, but I'll pick them from the back. You know, there's always going to be global competition. That is the reality. I've jokingly said inside our company that this is a global economic war, and the winner gets to have your job. So we better figure out how we're going to go about winning it. So competition will be there, will be prevalent. But I would argue also that our wonderful patent portfolio buffers us from some of that. Not doesn't buffer us from all of it, but it buffers us from a lot of it. The others, we had the competition, we had cyclicality. Forgive me. I actually don't look on 3M as a hugely cyclical company. I came out of the boat businesses. Now that's cyclic. You know, this is sort of mountains and deep valleys. So this looks relatively uncyclic. We will, I'm sure, undoubtedly undulate with the economic cycles in some way. I mean, if the economy is in recession, every world is going to be under pressure. But if you work on building the brands and you work on building the technologies, the trick always is to be the product of choice. If you'll forgive just a little homily for a minute. I was in Britain some years ago and went shopping at Safeway, and I reached in the fridge. I was buying some milk, and I saw this carton. It said 8% fat-free milk. That's interesting. 98% fat-free milk. Free milk. I suppose that's 2% milk. So I bought it. But it triggered a thought in my mind about what happens in downturns in economies. They don't normally go down 15, down whatever. They only go down 2%, and it means that 98% of the rest of the people are still there. So the trick is to find sufficient differentiation and sufficient reason for a customer to buy your product versus somebody else. And by the way, they will always first go to the good brands. So if you can have good brands and good products, it's the thing that's most likely to protect you in cyclic times. And so that's where you have to invest in that technology. It's why I made the point about you must invest in the down times as well as in the up times. You cannot be fair weather friends to technology and innovation. I did just point. You asked me about SG&A. I think we'll see some increases in SG&A, not material increases in SG&A because of advertising spending and because of more feet on the street. We are short of resources in a number of these different marketplaces. Even where we have capacity, we're short of resources on the street. So you see investments in those areas as well.
Cliff Ransom Research. When you make the shift from a diffuse and somewhat fragmented manufacturing base to single-purpose factories closer to your customers, that's a fundamental shift in mindset. It's a very difficult transition. What specific tools will you apply to motivate this base of people with their traditional backgrounds to accept that change and foster that change?
Well, I'm an engineer, and what an engineer learns is in any system, the system can be driven into instability if the gain is set too high. In other words, the rate of change is set too high. And it's the same with organizations. I was asked that question in one of our management meetings by a lady that works in South America. Her name was Rosa Miller. She said, so how can we do this, George? I said, well, I'm not sure that I know exactly how to do every piece of this, but what I do know is the first step is we don't make it any worse. So the next new plants all get built with this philosophy. You progressively over time move products out of some of the old plants, and some of the old plants will be at end of life and will suffer death by natural causes. So what you don't want is some cataclysmic, let's knock everything down and build everything up. That's not what you do. Very thoughtful. Unfortunately, relatively slow and considered is the answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jack Kelly, Goldman Sachs. George, in one of your slides, you had a comment, chronic underinvestment in capacity.
Yep.
I was kind of surprised to see it, actually. But tying that to growth, do you have any kind of sense of how much that might have trimmed your growth in recent years? Because in the first quarter, you did kind of singled out, I guess, $150 million in shortfall due to lack of capacity.
We have an accurate answer to that question, but Pat and I have speculated about it, and we think it may have cost us 1 to 2 percentage points of growth. But you can't get it back immediately because you've got to go build the capacity or acquire it. You may have to do some tuck-ins to try to get there a little faster. Certainly, I'm not happy with any notion that it's going to take us 2 or 3 years to get capacity on stream. That is just absolutely not acceptable. Okay. There are other ways.
And then just jumping ahead to Patrick's presentation a bit later on, going at you have margins going up about 150 basis points and ROIC going up also. How does that sync with what you were discussing earlier, where you might have to dip down in the margin scale to get some additional growth?
Pat's actually going to prove that point to you. Pat's actually got a little bit of arithmetic that will, I think, surprise you.
Thank you, Dave Begleiter, Deutsche Bank. George, how do you think about, on M&A, transformational transactions? What would it take for you to move to either another growth platform, another segment, versus bolt-ons going forward?
I think it's going to take a lot of pushing is what it's going to take. You know, I am a big believer in the nice bite-sized pieces. They're easier to integrate. The difficulty when you do big acquisitions relative to your own company, A, they're expensive, so that automatically elevates the risk. But the difficulty then sometimes is those companies, they have their own culture. You know, when we talk about integrating them, you're not really integrating them, you're accommodating them, is what you do. So I wouldn't say no against such things if they're absolutely compelling, but I don't think that you should imagine this is going to be a large feature of what we do.
Thank you. I got it. Thanks. Jeff Sprague from Citigroup. George, we danced around my question a little bit on some of the prior answers you just answered, but a lot of the presentation was more around the what you're going to do as opposed to the how you're going to do it. In terms of thinking about, you know, how do you direct R&D? How do you maybe change the compensation of people to change the behavior? You know, how the company maybe identifies deals and thinks about a pipeline that, when it is a complex organization that really hasn't done a lot of deals historically. So in terms of kind of putting your imprint on directionally getting people to think the way you want them to think and do what you want them to do, you know, how do we see that play out over the next year or so?
Well, I think it's probably that if your observation is accurate, I didn't tell the story very well. I mean, behind every one of these is constant sessions working on these issues, reminding people about the kind of products we need to work on and invent. And I've got meetings coming up with Jay Eilenfeld's people in the next couple of weeks. Turning the issue over to them, frankly speaking, saying, okay, look, while I have the general knowledge, and while I'm an engineer, I've worked on new product development, you know, most of my life, in reality, it has to be those people have to advise us in the labs. In the manufacturing restructuring, when you have complex companies with more than 100 manufacturing sites, you can't do big bang stuff on that. That's just got to be steady, relentless, looking at every opportunity and executing against them when they come up. So I think this is relatively straightforward. There's no great mystery in all of this. And I started off by saying that the answers to growth are often boil down to relatively simple things. First of all, have a plan, have a template that seems to fit so that when you're not there, people can think around how the template fits. Relentless execution, creating an environment where people are allowed to experiment. And that's a change in our company. We were there historically, but in the recent past, that wasn't as much encouraged perhaps as I would like. And already, you know, my colleague can tell you if you ask them in private, they will tell you that, you know, 3M, the 3M employee machine, has already bought into this as a way of doing business and are now in the process of executing. It's interesting for us to speculate about whether we actually got anything in the first quarter from this.
And I don't know that we necessarily can comport accurately. And I've asked a few people that question. The answer that people give me is yes. Maybe not, clearly not all of it, but some of it. So it's already started. And this isn't, anybody that knows me in this room or who knows people who know me in the room will know that I'm absolutely relentless. I grind very fine on these sorts of things. It can't be just a plan, it's the execution. Keep the plan simple and the execution relentless is my motto.
Yes, Mark Gully, Soleil Securities. Two questions. One, can you talk about the differences in morale and R&D in the 5 months or so since you've arrived? And two, in terms of CapEx, what kind of CapEx numbers can we look at going forward to support the manufacturing rejiggering you've talked about?
Pat's laughing at me up front here. How can I contrast the morale without getting myself into any trouble? I think it's safe to say it's much more positive. Is that a fair thing, Jay? Much more positive. You know, these guys, they identify me as one of them. They look at my career and they say, George went through these things. He understands what we do. He understands how important this is. He understands, by the way, the good side and the bad side. And the engineers and scientists are just absolutely ecstatic about it. But thank you for the question.
George, the CapEx question.
Oh, CapEx. Yeah, Pat's going to deal with it when he comes up, if that's okay.
Would you just address philosophically how you think your shareholders believe you should use your free cash flow and I guess their expectations and what you believe you should do with it, and especially if you get to be a higher growth company, is your dividend payout too high?
Well, we're a long way from that stage right now, but if you look at these return on investment numbers, it's clear that the best place to invest is in the core. It's hard to be, unless our stock price, for example, was low, it's hard to conceive of a better investment for 3M to make than something that delivers 24% return. So that is clearly going to be the place where we'll concentrate most of our attention. But really nothing else is off the table. We don't expect much to change historically in our dividends. And Pat's going to talk about a coordinated capital strategy when he gets up to speak a little bit later.
Thank you. Kurt Schanzinger from Merrill Lynch Investment Managers. You talked about acquisitions, a couple questions about acquisitions. Would you have bought CUNO? Would that kind of acquisition be consistent with what you're thinking?
I would probably have found it. It probably would have made me weak, I suppose. But you have to understand I'm cheap. I have Scottish genes coursing through my veins, and so I'm cheap. The interesting thing about CUNO and about any good growing asset is it will never be cheaper than it is today. That's the sadness. And I think in the CUNO acquisition, we're not talking about whether the price of CUNO should have been $1.3 billion or $600 million. We're talking about whether the price might have been 1.1 or 1.2. I think there's a different answer as well, which is almost more important. We knew about CUNO many years before when CUNO was a lot smaller. And we'd had the strategic intent and just never executed it. So the trick is to make sure that in the balance of risk and investment is if you know there's a good company and you're convinced it fits plan, there's no reason to not execute it reasonably early, and that's one way of not always necessarily overpaying for an acquisition. It can be avoided avoided sometimes.
Scott Davis, Morgan Stanley. I wanted to follow up on Jeff's question earlier and just talk a little bit about the incentive structure and in particular for your team. What changes have you had to make to the incentive structure to kind of drive the cultural changes that you're talking about, if any? And can you talk a little bit about the metrics that you'll be measuring going forward?
Well, these things have been, we've worked on the initial designs of these things, and they're going to be taken to the board at the next board meeting. Some refinements have got to be made, obviously, over time. The compensation system is already substantially EVA-based, which I like a great deal. But we're inserting successively higher levels of compensation for growth is what we are. And we're also going to insert in the long-term compensation the LTIP plan. We're going to insert some other measures that relate to market share, percent of new products developed, customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction, the kind of things that you know absolutely must be done well if you're going to have a good long-range success. So those are being worked at right now and will become features of the compensation in 3M before too much longer.
Okay, I think we're through, George. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.